This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And here we are once again, Thanksgiving upon us, and here we are, cold weather upon us, and we're racing towards Christmas.
Yeah.
And it just seems like summer is just in the rearview mirror, but here we are.
Right.
Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is a segment that I very much look forward to because we get to field your questions and have a great conversation with Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence. She's a master's degree nutritionist as well as a registered dietitian. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. A little chilly, huh?
Cold's not getting you down?
I kind of like walking around in this weather, actually.
Yeah.
I welcome it.
Caught me a little bit by surprise because I store my winter clothes. I thought, you know, I got my interim fall clothes out, and I thought, I can make it till Christmas, because
yeah,
with the, you know, global warming and the way things are going is that we're barely having any frosts before Christmas here in New York.
Mm.
But now think again, we had a record cold.
Yes.
So,
yes,
came back to bite us after a very, very warm fall.
Well, there's some kind of, I don't know if it's myth, legend, whatever, but if squirrels have very, very furry tails,
yeah,
it's going to be a cold winter.
And do they have furry tails?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I haven't looked at squirrels lately.
I haven't. My husband did, and he reported that we're going to have,
you know, I saw some squirrels, they didn't have any fur at all in their tails.
Mm.
Oh, those are rats.
Those are rats.
I saw them in the subway. I guess those aren't squirrels.
Yes, rodenticide.
Right. Remember?
Watch the danger sign, rodenticide.
Right, you see the skull and crossbones in the subway, and that's not for squirrels, right?
No, yeah, that's, no.
Okay. So, a little New York flavor for you. Before we get into questions, by the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is our address for email. We're very desirous of your questions because they're what fuel this lively discussion. So before we get into questions, it's interesting that, you know, I noted last week this, I wouldn't have noticed this because it's not a big deal, but they have something called WDD, World Diabetes Day. And that was last week. That was 11/14/17.
It's Diabetes Month, so.
Oh, it's Diabetes Month.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we're still we're still good.
Yeah.
We're still good because we're not, you know, dated.
Right.
So the day is passed, but we're still in the month. So let me share some impressions on World Diabetes Month. This headline from Science Daily. Sugar-sweetened drinks raise risk of diabetes metabolic syndrome. Duh. Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. What it suggests is that as little as a couple a day can dramatically boost your risk of diabetes.
Yes.
Regularly drinking sugar-sweetened beverages such as soda and juice, even juice.
Juice, absolutely.
So some people have that wholesome glass of orange juice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fresh squeeze, but I squeeze it myself.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of oranges.
They contribute to the development of diabetes, high blood pressure, and other health problems because metabolic syndrome doesn't just, it's not just about high blood sugar. It's about cardiovascular risk and hypertension, stroke risk. And those are the major, aren't those the major reasons that people die these days? It's all about metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless, you know, you get shot or you, you know, get in an accident or you get an infectious disease or, you know, cancer. And many cancers are associated with metabolic syndrome too.
Right.
Endometrial cancer, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, breast cancer.
And now hypertension being a feature or criteria for metabolic syndrome Interestingly, this morning I heard on the news that the new guideline for hypertension is now 130 over 80.
Right. And, you know, I actually wrote about this in an article for a scientific journal about a couple of years ago. And the title of the article was, Is Prehypertension a Disease?
Hmm.
And in those days, they said blood pressure 140 or greater on the systolic and 90 or greater. That's the old classic definition for decades, perhaps a century, has been the criterion for high blood pressure. But then there was this intermediate category called prehypertension. Mm-hmm. And so what good is a category that's a pre? And what my research revealed is that there was no benefit to treating prehypertension. In other words, it's a little like pre-heart attack is like high cholesterol. Okay, so they claim there's a benefit to lowering cholesterol to reduce cardiovascular risk. That's controversial. I think the benefits are meager, maybe there are some benefits for some people. But is it beneficial to get on blood pressure medication when your blood pressure is like 135 or 85?
Mm.
And the answer, according to most studies, is no. And so what they're recommending is lifestyle for
Absolutely.
That intermediate category.
Yes.
However, I think they're going to send the wrong signals to the medical profession because doctors are very literal. They're going to say, it's hypertension. They're not going to discriminate between borderline and full bore.
Right.
And in the rush to do something and also avoid liability and, quote, do the right thing, they're going to prescribe unnecessary blood pressure medication for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And without take, because it's a lot easier. I slide the prescription over you, that takes 2 seconds. Or these days you do it on an EMR. You type it, boom, 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 it's done.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about, how long would it take you to orient a patient to a proper diet and lifestyle approach to hypertension? Probably several visits.
Yes, absolutely. Because it is a very big lifestyle change. If you lose as little as 5 to 7% of your weight, that can make all the difference in the world. If you lower your carbohydrate intake, you will be carrying less water. It has a nice diuretic effect. You don't need to take that water pill, Lasix or Furoside.
And there's a relationship between insulin and catecholamines, which raise blood pressure, gets your sympathetic nervous system activated.
Right.
And,
another thing I see happening a lot, Dr. Hoffman, is patients will go to see their primary care. They are fasting, but they've had their cup of coffee in the morning, usually high test, not decaf. Lo and behold, they have an elevated blood pressure. I have told many patients now, next time you go visit your doctor and you have your blood pressure checked, don't even have a cup of coffee that morning. Not even a cup of decaf, I've told some. It's not just about the white coat syndrome. I think they may be slower caffeine metabolizers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a genetic SNP
that
would show that.
Yep.
Not that you need to find that out, but it's a good idea not to have.
Many studies suggest that consumption of coffee is not associated with higher risk of heart disease, and in fact may be associated with lower risk of heart disease because of the beneficial polyphenols in coffee.
Right. So even though you've had a temporary rise in your blood pressure, there is all of that. And there was another study about caffeine and AFib, in that caffeine being very stimulating may set the stage for atrial fibrillation, but there was another study that said it didn't.
It exonerated
coffee.
What
do we do?
It exonerated coffee. So coming back to this World Diabetes Day, there's a big push. And so I was like a look behind the curtain. What is this about? Diabetes awareness. What are we talking about? We want to get the word out on diabetes.
Yeah.
It's important. So I looked up the International Diabetes Federation, okay? It is the global advocate for people with diabetes. The mission of the IDF, that's also the Israeli Defense Force.
Oh.
But they happen to share the initials, the IDF. The mission of the International Diabetes Federation is to promote diabetes care, prevention, and cure worldwide. So let me look at who's behind that.
Hmm.
Who's sponsoring it?
Yeah.
World Diabetes Day Partners. Where's the money coming from? Follow the money trail.
Okay.
AstraZeneca. Becton Dickinson, which makes the needles. Boehringer Ingelheim makes medication. Lilly. Merck.
Oh, my.
Novartis. Novo Nordisk. Sanofi Diabetes. And Sun Life Financial, which is an insurance company, which is probably pretty heavily invested in the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you go. And by the way, I looked at this website in vain for any information about a low-carb diet,
mm-hmm.
which is the solution for type 2 diabetes and probably to some extent type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
Nowhere to be found. They do talk about healthy diet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you what that is. And they tell you to exercise. And they want you to do the right thing. But, oh, by the way, see your doctor and make sure you get the right medication.
Yes.
Which is, for the most part, unnecessary if you are willing to go that extra mile.
Right.
And so this month, another article that I put up was that a low-calorie diet is very effective.
Yes.
For treating type 2 diabetes. And now, it's
like
really
low
calorie. It's 800 calories per
day.
But hey, if you've got a choice, I mean, if I came down with diabetes and the doctor said, you got to go on this crazy, really low calorie diet, I'd say, I have a choice. I can be on medication, which is mostly ineffective with a lot of side effects, for the rest of my life and be a bon vivant and eat whatever I want. Or I can avoid being on medication. I think I would make the choice.
Yes.
And, you know,
and
sign up for some exercise.
Exactly. An 800 calorie diet to start for, I would say, a few days to kickstart or reset
or
metabolism.
Or even a little bit of intermittent fasting.
Right, know, right,
like
right.
a 5-2 plan, like eat,
exactly.
know, eat well 5 days, you know, clean, but then 2 days go to a very low calorie diet. You
yes.
can do it, you know.
You could. Anybody could. With the willingness to. So, very interesting. So, World Diabetes Day is backed by Big Pharma. They're not giving dietary advice. They're saying go on a diet.
Well, they are. They're saying,
but it's the wrong diet.
It's vague.
It's vague.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, again, another thing I posted, news and information for medical professionals. It's called Diabetes in Control.
Mm-hmm.
Why a low-carb diet should be the first approach in diabetes.
It's the antidote.
Treatment.
Yeah. It's a condition. Diabetes is a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. Therefore, the antidote would be a much lower carbohydrate diet. So it stands to reason that that should be the first way to... I'm glad somebody said...
And by the way, this diet, they use the K word here, it's a very low-carb ketogenic diet. When comparing a very low-carb ketogenic diet with a low-fat diet, results showed weight loss was better on the very low-carb ketogenic diet than low-fat diet.
Mm-hmm.
And low-fat diets have shown poor results in the long term for patients. This concept was recently highlighted in the Women's Health Initiative. In the study, women were instructed to follow a low-fat diet, which resulted in a modest weight loss. However, by the end of the intervention, many regained the weight back.
Mm.
That's
the problem with low-fat, low-calorie dieting is you're missing the macronutrient that is giving you satiety. That is it's fat.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling you that you're full. And when that's gone because you're on a low-cal diet, you're going to be hungry.
And I'll read on. Carbohydrate restriction is the most effective intervention for reducing all the features of metabolic syndrome.
Yep.
Results from a study comparing a low glycemic index diet with a standard high cereal diet,
mm-hmm.
cereal being fiber, they say eat a lot of fiber, you know, whole grains, blah, blah, blah. They looked at it in 201 people with type 2 diabetes. There was an increase in HDL for the low GI diet, and compared to a decrease for the other cereal diet.
Right, because it's low in fat or heavily grain-based. The HDL will go down.
The very low carbohydrate ketogenic diet showed the greatest decrease in triglycerides. Well, we know that.
Yeah. Triglycerides
as well
fall
as in
off
weight,
a cliff.
Yep. Hemoglobin A1C and glucose,
mm-hmm.
and a greater increase in HDL.
Yep. And probably fasting insulin.
So,
as well over time. And decrease in blood pressure, if anybody's measuring.
And lo and behold, dietary carbohydrate restriction is shown to have such an impact that in one study, there are reports of patients reducing or even eliminating medication therapy for their diabetes.
Wow! We've been doing that for how long?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They had to do a study. You know.
They had to do a study.
It's like, oh my
They could have asked us.
People can get off medication?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
It's very gratifying, especially amongst our patients with type 1 diabetes, the autoimmune diabetes, that they're able to greatly reduce the amount of insulin that they have to take on a very low-carb diet. And then they see weight come off, inflammation comes down, all kinds of other risk factors are reduced.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, this is, we're going to speak a little bit on the subject of diabetes.
Yeah.
Because it's that time of year.
Yeah. Holidays.
Maybe it's a good time to do this discussion before the holidays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, once you get, you know, it's, people are just plowed under by the holidays. So.
They are.
Yeah.
You have to have a plan. You have to have a strategy. Not just put on the feed bag for the whole Thanksgiving weekend, you know. Have a day. Have your feast. Send everybody home with Tupperware and all the leftovers and all of that kind of thing. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're back on program.
Right. My gym,
maybe you'll do a little Christmas shopping.
My gym is very busy on Thanksgiving morning.
Really?
Because people are paying it forward. They want to really hammer it out. So
right.
Also, it's nice as much as the kids play football sometimes. You know, they get together with their high school buddies or their college buddies, and they throw the football around a little bit, or play on a basketball court. And, just work up a sweat, and
wonderful.
Because you want to pay it forward.
Yeah. Well.
So here we go. Let's take some questions.
We have an email from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'm listening to your latest Q&A with Layla and have a question about calcium scores. Could a history of taking calcium supplements increase the score in women? A few years ago, ladies were pushed to take 1,500 milligrams or more of calcium every day to ward off osteoporosis, and almost no mention of vitamin D. Could women who were very compliant with this advice have had some of that calcium deposited in the arteries? It's certainly possible. Well, I know of women who've gotten kidney stones.
Yes.
We just saw a patient today, and she reminded me after years and years and years of taking calcium, she finally got kidney stones. Nobody ever told her about taking magnesium with it or vitamin K with it or vitamin D with it. So that, because those are the vehicles that drive the calcium to where it needs to go. There has been some research that has raised a red flag about coronary artery calcification and calcium supplements. I know we no longer advise our patients to take 1,500 or 1,200 milligrams a day of calcium. Really not more than 500, 600 or so.
Yeah.
And that's in a combination of various supplements
and
for bone health.
So, I mean, this all kind of stems from the initial mania over osteoporosis. You got started a little later than I did, but I got started firmly in the Tums era, you know, where the doctors would say, take, you know, three Tums a day. And the Tums is 500 milligrams, so you would be taking 1,500 milligrams a day. So they'd say, you know, don't go to the health food store because, that's all, like, expensive, hyped up stuff.
Hmm.
Just go to any place and get some Tums.
Get some Tums,
And so they should have foreseen that there was a problem, because in the 1950s, you remember Mad Men, the show? There was the stereotype of the Madison Avenue executive who was like the three martini lunch and, the high pressure thing, the smoker. And a lot of those guys had ulcers. It was actually kind of a badge of courage to have ulcers then. So what they would do is they would keep those glass bottles of milk.
Yeah.
They would keep a glass bottle of milk in their desk.
Uh-huh.
You know, after they had the three martinis, they would put out the fire with lots of milk. And then they would also take, Tums or, calcium supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And so they developed something called the milk alkali syndrome, which is they put so much calcium into them that they got kidney stones.
Oh, wow.
And they got excess calcium. And the calcium ended, it's filtered out. It got stuck in the kidneys, caused stones. So that's a problem. Now, the question is, does it go to the arteries? And we have some evidence here.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that there's one guy who pointed out this risk, and he's in, I believe, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed that women who take a lot of calcium have a higher risk of high calcium scores. But you look at his background, he's very anti-supplement.
Okay.
And so he's biased against supplements.
All right.
So you have to take that with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
They did a big study, which came out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that actually calcium intake from diet, was associated with protection against atherosclerosis.
Hmm.
So, and it may be that since there's something anti-atherosclerotic about dairy, you know, maybe, as opposed to the supplements, because what they found was that total calcium supplement use was associated with increased risk for coronary artery calcification.
Wow.
Based on the EBT scan.
Okay.
But no relationship was found with dietary calcium.
You know, what's interesting. Dairy is not a great source of calcium anyway because of its phosphorus content.
But vitamin K and maybe some other factors in dairy are protective.
They can be, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
So not that we're big fans of dairy because... Yeah. You know.
Another thing I want to point out about, you know, we were all told to take calcium all of our lives for our bone health, but I make it now a point to show any patient with a metabolic panel, look at your calcium level. It's right smack dab in the middle of normal.
Yes.
Why do you have to take all this calcium?
Right, right.
Meanwhile, your vitamin D is 18.
Right.
Your magnesium, even your red blood cell magnesium is kind of on the low side. These need to be addressed.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with your calcium level.
And the reason is that you have a readily available source of calcium to your body. And that's your bones are a bank
yeah.
for calcium.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is if you don't absorb much calcium, you'll take it out of the bank.
Mm.
And vitamin D is the factor that promotes or controls absorption of calcium.
Yes.
And to some extent, vitamin K, to simplify, it's a kind of a crossing guard for the calcium. Like the calcium that you absorb with the vitamin D, will it go to where it should go?
Yes.
Will it go to the bone? Will it not go to the arteries?
Mm-hmm.
So vitamin K is both protective against atherosclerosis and also enhances reabsorption of calcium to the bones.
Yeah.
And so we consider...
And can keep it out of other places like breasts and so forth.
But some women ask, a corollary question that we sometimes get is, you know, I have calcification in my breasts. Is that due to too much calcium that I'm taking? And the answer is it's probably not because calcium is, like you said inimitably in the past, it's like a spackle. You know, when you have injury or inflammation, that's where calcium gets deposited. So you might have a shoulder injury and you'll have a calcified shoulder.
Right.
In the case of
it's
the
like
breast,
a bone spur on your foot or
something like that,
right? A calcification.
But in the breast, where there's some inflammation, like potentially in a cancer, calcification can sometimes be a sign of the presence of that, or perhaps an old inflammation, some area of inflammation in the breast.
Yeah.
So there could be some so calcification is often a sign of like, oh, let's look a little closer on the mammogram. Is there cancer concealed around this calcification area?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be benign. It just be just a deposit of calcium that's benign.
Right. Interesting.
And it's not. I don't think it is about supplements when it comes to breast thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what they conclude finally in the study to answer the question is, I'll scroll down to the end of the study that I have on my computer screen. In summary, results from this long-term study of 10 years showed a protective relationship between total calcium intake and incident coronary atherosclerosis, but particularly among non-supplement users. Even though there was, however, we found evidence that calcium supplement use was associated with coronary artery calcium scores, and but they did not necessarily tie that to higher risk of heart disease.
Interesting.
So
what is that? Stable plaque calcification
maybe,
something?
Stable,
and not
yeah.
some other
right,
reason for
right,
okay.
just the presence of that.
Yeah.
Which may or may not have implications for heart disease risk.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
So bottom line, I would be a little conservative about calcium, but
yes.
I wouldn't be afraid of calcium supplementation. But since I've read this, I have revised downward my recommendations for calcium, especially in men, because men more prone to cardiovascular disease, less prone to osteoporosis. Why take all that calcium?
Right. And an older study, there was an association found with higher calcium and prostate issues.
Oh,
so calcium is not great for men's prostates.
Okay.
That could be something.
Or is it the relationship between the dairy intake and as a source of calcium?
That's
because
interesting.
There is some literature on the effects of dairy, which is a hormonal byproduct,
yes.
and
IGF.
Yeah, exactly. Insulin-like growth factor. Yeah, which they actually add BGH, bovine growth hormone, sometimes to milk.
So it's like a double whammy.
Yeah.
All this for a growing infant, and here we are drinking milk.
Right.
Probably shouldn't happen. Anyhow. So, Gene, if you're taking a calcium supplement, certainly check in with a qualified health practitioner as to the things that you should be taking and the correct dosage. But
oh, and by the way, again, very important to have a balance between calcium and magnesium because magnesium plays such an important role, and it may actually antagonize the adverse effects of calcium.
Yeah, like kidney stone formation. It keeps the calcium from crystallizing.
Yeah.
That way it keeps it more fluid.
Yeah.
So reduce your calcium to, I would say, well below 1,000 milligrams.
Perhaps 600 or 800 at most.
Yeah. Thank you, Gene, for your question.
And even, you know, as a result of this, I dramatically reduced the amount of calcium in my multi that, you know, I developed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've changed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. And when we return, give us a preview of what we're going to be tackling.
Do you have a working protocol to treat acute sciatica pain?
Okay, we'll tackle that important question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, our nutritionist in residence. As we deal with your questions, radioprogram@AOL.com is the email address for questions. Please send them to us so we can answer them on the air, as we're about to do in part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla.